All right, so we're into our second hour, and we are going to focus in more on what exactly is Planetary Tantra. So, John, I'd just like to ask you that simple question. What is Planetary Tantra? How would we put a summary on this?
Well, if you go to metahistory.org, you'll see that at the top of the homepage is a panel of 13 buttons, which are comprised of the main content of that site. And then there's a banner underneath those buttons that says Planetary Tantra. If you click on that banner, it brings you to Planetary Tantra, Interactive Magic with Gaia, which is actually a whole complete other site within the metahistory.org site. I could have created another site called planetarytantra.org, but I didn't. So I just included in there. And when you click on that banner, it brings you directly to the page of introduction, introducing Planetary Tantra. And there you will read a definition. What is Planetary Tantra? Rapturous immersion through desire and imagination in the dreaming power of the earth. It is the most intimate way of bonding with the planetary animal mother, Gaia. So that's one definition of it. Immersion through desire and imagination in the dreaming power of the earth.
Yes, it's the most intimate way of bonding with the planetary animal mother, Gaia.
I believe so, yes.
So by bonding, would you like to talk a little bit about what do you mean by what are different avenues of bonding? What are different techniques of bonding?
It's very simple. The main way of bonding is through desire. Desire is the principal emotion and the principal force or fuel of this special kind of tantra. We spoke in the first hour of the iron bond.
Mm-hmm.
When you perform the planetary, the Gaian tantric vow, you prick your thumb and you allow a little bit of your blood to bleed into the earth as a ritual gesture of making the iron bond. That is to say that you are integrating your self right down to the action in your bloodstream with the electromagnetic field of the earth. You are making them into one. You are making them interactive. You're already immersed in the electromagnetic field of the earth. That's a fact. But it is not a conscious and intentional action. It's just a passive condition. And what we do in this practice is we raise that passive condition into a conscious and intentional condition. Then when you have ritually and symbolically established the bond through the iron in your blood, then you follow the practice by bonding through desire. You bond your desire to her desire. The highest achievement that a human being can reach on this planet, I believe, is this. If you lived your own desires to the fullest, and those desires were completely in harmony with the desire of the planet itself, and that, in a sense, is the goal of this practice. So desire is a very important factor in Planetary Tantra. We don't diss it. We don't dismiss it. We don't consider it to be something bad, or something that spiritual people overcome their desire. Desire is selfish.
Right.
A lot of desire is selfish. But that doesn't mean that your desire could not be a transcendent and transpersonal energy. It could be transmuted into a transcendent and transpersonal energy. And this is what it becomes in the course of this practice.
So, yes, it differs from anything else that we've experienced on the world stage in the sense that there's no suppression of desire. Desire itself is an incredible energy, an incredible, wonderful power. It's just the direction that we take that desire, whether it's in line with the desires of Sophia or not.
Exactly. It's as simple as that. Desire is the tool and fuel of this unique Gayan Tantra. And the only thing you have to ask yourself is, not how do I overcome my desires and lend my life in service to the planet. That's ridiculous. This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. You have to ask yourself, how could I achieve my highest desire for myself that would also be according to her desire, so that those desires would merge and complement and enforce each other? She wants us to achieve our highest desires, the highest desire of our life. And yet, this is a problematical thing with human beings. Because if you actually look at it honestly, don't look at other people, just look at yourself first. Look at yourself honestly and ask yourself this question. What is my highest desire?
Yeah. Really go into that. Ask yourself what it is. Yeah,
ask yourself that question. You will find, perhaps, that that's not so easy to answer.
No, it's not.
And needless to say, if you don't know what your highest desire is, you're not going to be able to achieve it.
That's something I've thought about for a long time in my life, and I could tell you what mine is, and that is to be a force of nature myself, for my being to become a force of nature. That's what I came up with a long time ago.
You know, it's a wonderful thing if you can formulate what your highest desire is. But when you do so, be aware that that formulation is fluid and mutable. In other words, you at a certain moment in your life, you could say, this is the highest desire of my life right now.
Yeah.
And hold to that definition, hone the definition of what it is and live with it and hold it vividly in your memory and live that desire. And then you will find that that desire morphs and mutates. The core of it remains the same, but the manner in which you live it may change. And this is part of the practice. This is part of the use of desire as a tool and as fuel for spiritual development.
And you go on to say that it's not the love of power, but the handling of power. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say this in a way that is as vivid as I can make it. I'll be candid and honest about this. Planetary Tantra is a power trip. Now, again, there are a lot of spiritual people who would, you know, protest immediately, you know. Oh, power trip, you know. We don't want power trips. Power trips are bad. It's all about love and harmony and getting along. Well, love and harmony and getting along are fine. But there are aspects of human behavior that love and harmony and getting along don't reach. And we cannot be powerless on this planet, cannot be powerless against predators and against anyone who would harm life or harm the magnificent web of life in which we live. And so, if you're making an approach to Planetary Tantra, it's helpful, I think, to realize that it's a power trip. It's a power sharing arrangement. Power sharing. It's a practice of power sharing with the Earth, with the living planet. And the unique characteristic of this path is that it's not about the love of power in the sense of using power over other people. It's about the love of handling power and the pleasure it is to handle power. Let me give you an example. When a concert violinist performs in an orchestra, playing a solo in a concerto, and all the other members of that orchestra participate, and the conductor is conducting the orchestra, they are handling power. And the experience of handling the power to play the violin beautifully, the power to shoot a bow and arrow, as in the art of Zen archery, the power to make a cup of tea, as in the art of tea, the power to dance, the power to figure skate, the power to swim, the power to do anything in a virtuoso fashion is extremely beautiful and pleasurable. So this is what I mean when I talk about not the love of power, but the love of handling power. This is what Planetary Tantra is about. And the power that you handle is, first of all, your own power, your own ability as a human being to express yourself, to express intention and imagination, the power of all your emotions, positive and negative, anger and love alike, hatred, indifference, contempt, joy, generosity, everything you feel, the power of handling those emotions and the power of handling what Gaia gives you as she interacts with you. The surplus power, the extravagant power that she gives you. And this path is about handling that power with beauty, skill, compassion, and in a non-harming way, except in the case of those who harm.
Would you like to say a little bit more about that? I think I see where you're going with that, but...
Sure. It's often said by people who profound spiritual ideas and spiritual teachings that the principle of harmlessness is supreme, called ahimsa in Sanskrit, ahimsa, people of harmlessness. Love everyone, do no harm, harm nobody. That's a fine principle as far as it goes, but it's not very realistic. And in certain ways, it's insidiously wrong. Why is it insidiously wrong? Because there are behaviors of certain human beings that cannot be tolerated. Those behaviors are, let me list some. Abuse and sexual molestation of children. Any kind of physical or verbal abuse to another human being. Doing harm to animals. Raping of nature. Inconsiderate use of the resources of nature. Harming the beings in all other human beings in all kinds of ways, from deceiving them to actually physically harming them. And these behaviors cannot be tolerated. So if you're a loving person, you cannot be simply a passive person who allows those things to happen. You need to have the power to resist and overcome those behaviors in other people. And so there's an aspect of this Planetary Tantra, which we'll get into, which concerns the power to defend the earth, the power to defend what lives against what threatens to harm and hurt and deceive. And this is a responsibility and a commitment that comes along with this practice.
Yeah, and for people who are thinking it's not the place of humans to engage in these kind of activities and that we should leave that just to planet Earth herself and to Sophia herself, that they're forgetting the aspect of this, that this is a dance with Sophia. She will give you as much energy as you need to deal with these very destructive aspects that have been plaguing our planet for, 5,000 years or more. And when you tap into it, be ready for it, because it's extremely vibrant energy.
Yeah, you know, do you want to be part of her immune system? She has an immune system, you know. The earth has an immune system. And what happens in your body when your immune system kicks in? Well, certain cells, certain healing cells, warrior cells, you could even call them, go to the place where the body is wounded or to the place where the life forces of the body are threatened, and they fight off the invader. They fight off the virus or the infection, or they fight off the wound, and they heal. And do you want to be part of Gaia's immunity system? Well, that's an opportunity you have with this practice. So there is a warrior aspect to it. And part of the pleasure of handling power is to be able to use it on perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all I care to say about that at this particular moment.
Good. That's exactly how I felt your thoughts going in at this time. Yeah. Okay, that's enough said about that for the moment. But I would like to add one thing, that this there's no power on the earth that's more powerful than the power of a mother. You know, you hear stories about babies that have fallen off a 30-story building of playing on a veranda or something, and the mother, you know, is 200 meters away, and she'll run those 200 meters in, you know, 5 seconds to catch that baby, or throw a car off of a trapped child, her child, you know, or a mother bear, you know, in the forest with her baby. If a wolf comes and attacks that baby, you can imagine the ferocity that's going to go into tearing that wolf apart limb from limb. And that's the kind of power that's unleashed on a much, much more enormous scale. So just to give an idea of what that
is. Yeah, one of the beautiful things, exactly, Thomas, one of the beautiful things about the film Avatar, no matter what you may think of it on the whole, it had some beautiful moments and some beautiful lessons. And to me, the most beautiful lesson in the film Avatar came when Jake, the Avatar, was talking to Neytiri, and they were in a desperate situation because the invaders were coming in with tanks and bombs and airplanes and going to blow them up so they could get their natural resources, which is actually a metaphor for what's happening on the earth today.
Unobtainium.
And Jake, who was only beginning to learn the ways of the indigenous people of Pandora, said to Neytiri, well, you know, why don't we go and ask Eya, who is the name of the goddess Gaia in that story, why don't we go and ask Eya to intervene and do something here? And Neytiri said, well, she doesn't act that way. She only intervenes to correct the balance of power, you know? And then in the last part of the film, we see that she did intervene, because the goddess Eya sent her animals. She sent her animal powers, as they're called in shamanism. And Jake and the indigenous tribe, Neytiri's tribe, wouldn't have been able to defeat these terrible predators with all their technology and their weapons if Gaia had not added the force of her animal powers. Well, something similar is happening today. Planetary animal has tremendous protective and defensive forces. And when you align with her, you become part of that defensive system. And then you learn to use your power in accordance with that system. So that's what we're getting at in discussing this aspect of the practice.
Now, I don't want to segue out of this, but I do want to get this out into the open and onto the record before it kind of fades away. And that is the aspect of this, of taking the Gaian Tantra vow.
Right.
And we don't need to go into detail about that yet, because that might come later. However, I would like to say what happened to me 5 days ago, if you'll allow me to indulge in that a little bit.
Certainly. You know, I would like to have the opportunity, or offer the opportunity, as this process unfolds, for everyone who's taken the Gaia Guy and Sandra vow to give sort of a testimonial if they want to do so. So it's more than appropriate that you would speak of it.
Okay, yes, I think that's a wonderful idea. And if people would like to contact me about that, I could set up a time to get that on record and record that. And maybe we could make a collection of those or whatever we would like to do with that as this progresses. What happened in my case was last Wednesday, I had gone out into the mountains. It had been snowing here in Japan. But I went out to the mountains, and there's a cottage up there where the people graciously allow me to kind of make free use of it. And I went up there and parked my car, and there was no one around. And I put all my crystals that I carry around with me and my books and stuff and on the desk here on the table out on the balcony. And I was doing my studying and just kind of having a good time. And I thought, I'm going to take off my shoes and socks like I usually do and go out walk barefoot around on the mountain, partway in the snow and partway in the bare ground. And as I was doing this, I was suddenly overcome with an overwhelming desire to go ahead and do the Gayan vow, even though it's usually done with another person. But spontaneously, and I hadn't prepared any words per se, and I, you know, did kind of a spontaneous rite right there where I cut my hand. I didn't want to cut my thumb, but I cut my hand, put that into the soil, and called out, you know, Vajra Virashi in a, not a super loud voice, but in a fairly loud voice for a few minutes as I'm spanning the horizon and looking into nature and connecting myself with her. This went on for a couple of minutes, and I just felt this overwhelming bliss, this surge of energy. Anyways, when basically that part of it was finished, I then walked around on the top of the mountain for about 10 minutes holding this, you know, citrine crystal that I have. Finally made my way back to where I had taken the vow and was just standing there looking at this beautiful crystal for 2 or 3 minutes, just gazing into it. I put the crystal down and looked up into the blue sky. And the shape of the crystal, which is kind of an oval shape, was there in the sky. It was a light green shape. And I thought, this is, you know, this trick of the eye, in a sense, of something that burned into my retina. However, this just stayed there, and it actually got deeper in the green color of it. And, you know, my mind was kind of making comments, but I'm just kind of ignoring that, watching this happen. And in the center of this shape, a little bit darker light green ball started to appear. And very shortly after that, it moved outside of this outline into the sky off to the left. And two hawks appeared right where this ball had moved to. And they proceeded to come towards where I was. And as they got closer, I could see that one was a little bit bigger than the other. The big one was red, and the smaller one was yellow. And they proceeded to circle around over my head, probably about 15 meters above my head or so, for 2 or 3 passes, and then fly away. By this time, I'm just completely overtaken with just bliss. I mean, indescribable. And eventually, after they flew off, the light green light seemed to dissipate. And I went back to the table and put my citrine crystal on the table and picked up these two other crystals that I had brought with me. The second one I picked up is a Tibetan clear quartz crystal that, you know, 15 minutes earlier was in perfect condition. When I picked it up, it had been split in half. And, you know, I wasn't angry. I wasn't sad. It was like immediately the knowledge was that this was a message from Sophia just saying, boom, this is the kind of power that you're dealing with, or that is conveyed. And basically that I haven't left that connection since then. You know, it's been 5 days of just this incredible roller coaster ride of indescribable energies. So I just want to get that out there. And if you have any comments on that, John, I would love to hear them.
Well, sure. You know, number of people who've done the Gayan Tantra vow have reported to me experiences that followed immediately upon doing it. act of calling the name, this name, Vajravilasi, of yelling it, screaming it out into the wilderness as if you're calling for some animal or person who's out there, can produce remarkable effects. Doesn't always, but it can. And people have reported similar things to me, different events of similar strangeness and intensity. I think that you were particularly fortunate in the way that the earth and the atmosphere responded to you there. I can see a number of distinct features of those phenomena which reflect very clearly what I understand about Gaian physics, Gaian biophysics, and the way that the mother animal connects mm-hmm. to us. For one thing, the greening of the sky is something that happens in this practice. In fact, I was sitting out here yesterday on a terrace, on my terrace in Spain. It was a warm, sunny afternoon. It was just at noon. And the sky was absolutely perfectly clear. And normally, of course, you know, the color of the sky is blue. So it appears to be. But as I was sitting there, and at a certain point, my proximity or my connection with the earth through this process shifted my assemblage point slightly. Then I saw that as it did so, the color of the sky changed from blue to green. And this is something that can happen, and this will happen to you, to some people who do this practice and who do the vow. Green is actually the color of what the sky really looks like when you experience it as a living presence. Sky is actually the atmosphere that we see out there is not empty. It's not just full of air. It has a substance to it. In fact, it's kind of like a gel. And when you see and contact that substance in these altered moments, these moments of altered perception, sky turns green. So I would say that you got a perception of the diamond sky immediately at this moment. And that's really remarkable. Moreover, the apparition of the two hawks was an omen that was coming out of the green sky. I would say that those hawks could be thought to represent passion, which is red, and wisdom, which is gold. And passion and wisdom are the two ways we navigate through this process of planetary tantra. So it's very, very beautiful omens that you received here. And that happened because you had the presence of mind to see them. As for the crystal, if it was a Tibetan crystal, can understand why that may have happened.
What is the significance of it being Tibetan?
Well, up until now, up until the moment the planetary tantra is announced and begins to spread, Tibetan Buddhism has been the sole repository of certain wisdom, a certain wisdom and practices of a very specific kind. And these wisdom and practices that have been preserved in Tibetan Buddhism for thousands of years until this day concern the instruction and the action of these divine feminine beings called Dakinis. As a matter of fact, if you read into certain Tibetan books about Tibetan Buddhism, the ones that are more honest and tell you what's really going on, rather than just con you with the doctrines and the formulas and all the complicated things that they lay on you. If you read some of the people who have really spoken openly about the essence of Tibetan Buddhism, you'll come across this phrase, the spontaneously arising Dakini wisdom. and the spontaneous arising, that Kini wisdom, is actually the mind and intelligence of Gaia herself. And the Dakinis are, as it were, aspects of the divine feminine. And the story is, unfortunately, up until now, that the knowledge of how to connect to the spontaneously arising Dakini wisdom, how to practice magic with it, how to learn from it, that is to say, receive instruction from these Dakini beings. And all that goes along with that has been the monopoly of a group of men in this monastic system, this highly protective and secretive system of Tibetan Buddhism. So you can consider that the crystal, the Tibetan crystal, represents a holding. It's a vajra. You know, crystal is, vajra means crystal or diamond, as well as thunderbolt. You had a vajra made of natural crystal from Tibet, and that broke open. And that is exactly what Planetary Tantra is. It is the breaking open of the monopoly of Tibetan Buddhism and offering to the world at large all of the secret ritual practices and wisdom of the Dakini realm. All of it, without charge, without hierarchy, without gradations of practice. It's all there as the bounty of Gaia's wisdom for us to receive, the wisdom that nurtures us, the wisdom that inspires us, guides us, keeps us young. This fantastic wisdom treasure was released to the world at large in the summer of 2008 in what I call the Terma of Gaia Awakening. And so I think it's fantastic, probably has something to do with your connection and mine, because we have somehow a very close and immediate connection.
Yeah, some kind of an entanglement happened, yes.
Yeah, we have a beautiful entanglement happening. And I think it's a fantastic omen, Thomas, not only for you to have made the vow in that way, but it's a fantastic omen for me too, because it fits and confirms exactly what I'm doing. Breaking the mold and blowing the doors off the Patala.
Yeah.
You know, there is no more withholding and monopolizing of the divine feminine by men. It's over.
And you mentioned to me before that's an intention that you've had for quite some time, to break that open.
Well, it's an intention I have. It's a mission I have. You could say that Gaia herself gave me that mission. It's the mission of my entire life. I've been on this mission since I was 4 years old. You can read about it if you read Severed Rose.
Yes.
It's kind of a memoir. Yeah. I describe the lucid dream I had at the age of 4 when I met my guardian, Kali. Kali is an aspect of Gaia. She represents the wrath of Gaia, but she also represents the protective force of the planetary animal, Mother. And from the age of 4, I've been on this mission. And it is my intention and also my pleasure and my privilege, so I can pull this off, to bring this fantastic magic out and to take it out of the hands and out of the control of this patriarchal group of monastic self-proclaimed masters and tulkus and rinpoches. So that's how the Tibetan crystal breaks wide open. It's exactly what we're doing in this conversation.
Well, I know you just used the word, if you can achieve this, and I know that you can. I mean, there's no way you can't. With Kali as your ally, there's no way it can't be achieved.
Yeah, it's starting to look pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty happy about the way things are going. And I've got a lot of it down in writing in Planetary Tantra on the site. You can read about the term of Gaia Awakening, what that is. You can read all the basic elements. The Gaia Tantric vow is there. Shows you how to take the vow, how to form your own bond to Gaia, how to make a pact with the earth. Make a pact with the earth, just like you would make a pact with another human being. And it's all there. And now comes the pleasure of talking about it and teaching and sharing it out in the open. And so, I would say that the game is on. Wait, I don't know what's going to happen when the Tibetans get word of it.
Mm-hmm.
I did get one email. I have to mention this. You know, I have to say I rarely ever get any negative, critical, or attacking email on MetaHistory.org. Mm-hmm. Having Kali as your guardian has certain...
Yeah, you are kind enough to share that mail with me. It's quite comical, actually.
Yeah, I did get one mail recently, and this is very unusual, of some guy, very sincere guy, who has been involved with Vajrayana and Tibetan mm-hmm. Buddhism, you know, who was like warning me, you know, and saying, oh, this is really bad what you're doing, mm-hmm. you know. You can't be saying that you're doing this. First of all, he didn't believe I could do it. But then he was saying, even pretending that you could break out to the world and release to the world the secret Dakini wisdom that is the basis of Tibetan Buddhism. Oh, this is bad, bad, bad. You shouldn't be doing
this. You're touching a sacred cow there, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, you're releasing some of the secrets, and you know, there are going to be repercussions and ramifications, and you're going to pay for this and this kind of thing. You know, so I thought that was pretty funny, but he really was sincere, and I understand that he feels sure. that way. But I have to tell you that the game is over, and I would also say that I will stand. If any, this is a remote possibility that this will ever happen, but I will stand on any stage in the world. For any group of people with any Tibetan Lama or Rinpoche or the Dalai Lama himself, you put me up against them. And I would be happy to stand there and tell them what I'm doing and show them what I'm doing and ask them what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, I feel that from you very strongly. I have no doubt that you're ready to do that.
Yeah. Totally, totally. I'm completely transparent. I have nothing to hide. And I want to say that there are no secrets in planetary tantra. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the predictions, again, that was made in the Mahanirvana Tantra is a very beautiful line where the tantricas who wrote that document said, in the final years of Kali Yuga, which is now, the practices of the Kalikas, or the worshippers of Kali, will be done completely and transparently out in the open. And that's the big difference between me and what's been done in Tibetan Buddhism for all these long centuries.
Yeah, it needs to be out in the open, because just as you write here, it says, you say, bonding with Gaia relies on desire and imagination, faculties the earth goddess implants in human creatures as a divine birthright. Turn those faculties toward Gaia, the source, and you bond with her at the source. Desire and imagination, as you experience them right now, are direct, imminent extensions of the dreaming power of the planetary mother animal. That's
exactly.
Wonderful.
That's exactly right. And when we engage that power, it's for us to play with. It's for our delight. It's for our instruction. And there is nothing secretive. You know, I was thinking in the break that I wanted to make a sort of disclaimer. And as you know, there is a disclaimer.
Yes.
At the end of my page on introducing planetary tantra.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you that at the end, but please, yeah. Why don't you go ahead and bring that in
right now? Yeah, let me add something else to that disclaimer. The disclaimer that's written there, you know, says that I'm not setting up a private cult of Dakini mm-hmm. magic, and I'm not making a play to be a guru. I'm not I'm the last person in the world who wants to be a religious fanatic and start some new movement. This is not a movement. I'm not proselytizing and recruiting for planetary tantra. I'm simply putting out the message that it's here. Everything I do is completely transparent. The disclaimer that I particularly want to make is this. I sometimes use the word sorcery, you know, Thomas, and it's a word that puts some people off. I'm comfortable with the word sorcery. You also seem to be. uncomfortable with sorcery because I grew up with Carlos Castaneda, and that he gave a definition of the term that I'm very comfortable with. Don Juan actually made this definition. Sorcery is the practice of breaking and going beyond the parameters of perception. Sorcery is the practice of changing parameters of your perception. So it means sorcery is something, is a practice of expanding your consciousness beyond the programming of your mind, beyond the description of the world that you're given. You break through the parameters of that description. You break through the perception that is imposed on you, and you create your own dynamic perception of the universe, and you interact with it. So I'm very comfortable with the word sorcery, and I've even coined the term Gaian echo sorcery.
Gaian echo sorcery.
Yeah. You could say that planetary tantra is echo sorcery. It's sorcery using the power of the planet. But I want to make it clear to people when they hear that word that, you know, John Lash is not some guy who walks around in black and wears a pentagram and does weird secret rituals and, you know, things that might resemble what some people foolishly call satanic rites and that kind of ridiculous stuff. I don't do anything of the sort. But I am involved in a new kind of magical practice, the magic, the sorcery of love and intention that grows out of bonding with Gaia. And all of this is totally new. All of this is going to be defined as we explore it. It's not just me that's going to define it. I've defined a lot of it. I've defined the groundwork. But the people who are drawn to it are the ones who are going to expand and define it on their own terms as well. So that's my disclaimer.
Yeah. Anybody that knows anything about you, has spent any time studying you at all, knows that you are not peddling yourself as a guru, or this is some kind of an ego trip or anything like that. That just, you know, you can't peg that on you at all.
People have tried to make me a guru, and if you ever run into any of them and ask them what happened, you'd find that they would give you a vivid account of how it didn't work. also, I want to say, just in case anybody's wondering, I don't charge, you know, for anything, and I will never charge for talking and teaching about the Sophia myth and planetary tantra. When MetaHistory.org was established, it was put online, and it got up and running through the support and sponsorship of a nonprofit organization in the United States, the Marian Foundation. But that relationship ended in May of 2009. And since then, I completely do Planetary Tantra and MetaHistory.org by myself. Nobody pays me to do it. I do not get paid to talk to you. I would never charge to talk to anyone or teach anyone about these matters. The only thing that I get paid for is my books. Sale of my books brings in some money. So I don't charge, and I don't ask anyone for money ever in the process of sharing and disseminating this wonderful practice.
Yeah, and, you know, people really should reflect on that for a few minutes there. And, you know, in the world that we're living in now with people selling every kind of information they have, or it's even not their own information often, it's information they've plagiarized in a sense and charging money for it.
Or channeled.
Yeah. You know, this is an incredible gift and an incredible thing. So please value it accordingly. And I would like to add also that on my show, Grok the Talk, I do this all without charging anyone anything. And it's actually costing me an arm and a leg to keep it going. But that's fine. Fine. I have no problem with that. But I don't want to dwell on that and get all...
It's an important distinction to make, though, Thomas. You know, planetary tantra is not for sale. Yeah.
Good. John, let's get into another thing here. I don't want to keep you much longer today because we've been going, I'm eating up a lot of your time here. But you say that there are kind of legs to planetary tantra. One is the organic light.
Right.
One is the Shakti
right.
cluster. And one, of course, is the fallen
right.
goddess story, Sophia's biography. So, we've
That's
covered
right.
One of those quite extensively. And I think the organic light is kind of a too big of a subject to get into much right now. How about if we talk a little bit about the Shakti cluster?
Sure.
And let me just tell people to go to, right here on the Planetary Tantra section and just click on Shakti cluster there on the menu
right.
on the left.
In the Planetary Tantra section, you see the banner Planetary Tantra at the top. That's Aboriginal art that I used as the design. And then you see the phrase interactive magic with Gaia. And then if you look in the left, you see that there's a menu tree in the left-hand column. And if you click on Shakti cluster, it brings you to the page that is entitled The Shakti Cluster, the Tantric Tree of Life. So what is the Shakti cluster? I'll read from that page. It is a model of a vortex in the bioelectromagnetic field of the Earth, comprising a console of 18 channels, which are represented symbolically and visually by supernatural women or devatas. And these are divine expressions, dynamic expressions of the divine feminine. So that's one way to describe the Shakti cluster, and there's a design of it there, which is a circular design with a pentagram, inverted pentagram inside. And the 18 components of the Shakti cluster are numbered. That was my first sketch of it. I have another improved sketch, which I'm going to post in the process of posting on the same page here soon.
Any idea when that will be coming? Because I've been anxiously
awaiting
that.
I'll post it in the next
Wonderful.
Day, as a
okay.
promise. Yeah, I just have to scan it, put it
Great.
Outside. So the Shakti cluster, in terms of the dynamics of the Earth, is actually a turbulent vortex in the magnetic field of the Earth. And the nature of this vortex is very amazing because it is a conscious organ of the goddess herself. That's how I would express it. I spoke earlier of the fact that the goddess Sophia, who is embodied in our planet, is awakening. And that awakening process is something that we can experience. And it has many fascinating aspects. One of them is that as she awakens, a kind of organ forms in the electromagnetic field of the planet. Her consciousness is distributed in the form of resonant frequencies all through the electromagnetic field of the planet. It's streaming, her awareness, her consciousness and attention is streaming continually through the atmosphere and the electromagnetic field of the planet at the same time. Due to that condition, which has prevailed up until now, her consciousness is not located in any particular place. It is globally or massively distributed around the Earth. But now, in the course of the last 200 or 250 years, Gaia herself is undergoing a remarkable shift. And in this shift, she is becoming able to focus her consciousness in a kind of an organ. You might consider it like an eye. A primitive eye is forming, primitive organ of sight, a primitive organ of speech. You might consider it like a mouth. And this organ is a very complex entity. It's called the Shakti cluster, and it consists of actually a console of 16 frequencies, excuse me. And these frequencies are actually the channels through which she is able now to communicate directly to us. So as this organ forms in her own body, she becomes able to have a degree of communication with human beings that was never possible until now. It's a remarkable development for her, and it's a fantastic opportunity for us. So in planetary tantra, we learn to use the Shakti cluster as a way of attuning ourselves to her consciousness. And all of this, of the 16 frequencies, of the 18 frequencies, 16 of them are active transmitting frequencies. And channel 18 is the frequency of the voice of Gaia herself. The other channels are modalities of her voice, which are represented by these other goddesses, such as Kali, Matangi, Kamala, Chinnamasta, and the diamond sky Dakinis, such as Vajrayogini and Kurukula.
And roughly they are divided into the Mahavidyas and then the diamond sky Dakinis, the five and the
right.
Five or six, however you want to call it that way in the center, yeah.
Right. Right. One of the things I want to say about the Shakti cluster is it is a particular design. I call it the Tantric Tree of Life. And my intention to teach as much as I can about the nature of this design and how it works and how it can be used for interactive magic. But one thing I want to point out about this design, extremely important to understand as you're approaching this information, this design can be modeled, it can be drawn and shown to you. You can look at it as you see it on the site. But ultimately, this design is fluid and metamorphic. And so you cannot ever pin it down. One of the characteristics I've learned, and it gives me great joy to say this because it's a delightful thing to learn, is that the methods through which Gaia operates and communicates to us are fluid and constantly changing, constantly morphing into new forms. And so you can never model it in a rigid way. That's the word I was looking for. You can never model it and nail it down in a rigid way. And so if I seem to be uncertain about what I'm saying, if I seem to say, oh, at a certain moment there are 16 frequencies or there are 18 frequencies or there are 10 Mahavidyas and there are 6 Diamond Sky Dakinis, all of this stays open and fluid. The joy of learning it is that you learn to handle that power without freezing it into what I call a male mind model.
Sure. A dogmatic approach, yeah.
Yeah, a dogmatic approach. You can't nail it down. You can't freeze it into cut and dry terms ever. It's a delight to model it. It's a delight to show artistically and geometrically mm-hmm. how these structures can be represented. But ultimately, the energy is constantly dancing and constantly changing. And the tool of the Shakti cluster model is only like a framing device to orient you toward those energies and to engage you with them. But ultimately, that framing device will change. I assigned certain known names of Dakinis and Mahavidyas. These are goddesses in Hindu Dravidian religion. I assigned these received names to the 18 points of the Shakti cluster, but they will change. Those names will change because these points are mere frequencies. And as you connect with them and become intimate with them and communicate with them, because they are alive, they will morph in your own mind and your own imagination. And yet the way that the frequencies work together and the overall dynamic will remain constant in a particular way. There are guidelines for this. It's not an anything goes proposition. There are definite guidelines within which these energies can be encountered and understood.
And you give very practical ways for doing this, which we will cover probably starting in the next talk. But one of the aspects of that is creating a lunar observational calendar that I'm sure you will start to go into detail on how people can actually practically make these, but we won't have time to do that today, of
course.
That's right. But, yeah.
That's right. Planetary Tantra is practiced on the format of the lunar calendar. And so the first thing that you do is go back to observing the moon. And the things that one can observe about the moon when you start to get into it are intricate and fantastic to a degree that's really incredible. It's not just sitting there on your terrace and, looking up, well, there's the moon. When you become interactive, when you begin to see the detail of what is happening with the moon and you begin to recognize it, it's really a fantastic process of discovery. And it's through the moon and the cycles of the moon that we learn to track these frequencies.
Yeah, I have not actually gone through a whole cycle yet. I'm because I just started doing this with the most recent new moon. And boy, oh boy, if this continues on at this pace, it's such an incredible adventure. There's so many things that awaken inside of you and discoveries that happen. It's impossible to explain it until you actually take the bite and experience it for yourself. So it's a very exciting prospect that you, the listener, are just getting the taste of right now.
Yeah, and I want to add that it's easy to get involved with this. It's not hard. It's not difficult and complicated. You don't have to make years of study, you know? It's easy as long as you feel the excitement and the attraction to it. The key to Planetary Tantra, making it work, is to enjoy
fun,
it. To have enjoyment. And believe me, I enjoy it a lot, and it enjoys me. And the more I enjoy it, better I get at it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. It's a kick. It's a real kick. Now, what about, John, what about people who would look at this and say, have a little bit of apprehension about there being an inverted pentagram there? What would you say about that?
Well, I would say, first of all, that you need to go back and read Jeffrey Burton Russell or some other scholar who explains that Satan is a creation of Christianity. Mm-hmm. There is no Satan.
Exactly.
You know, there's no Satan in the universe. It's a fiction of a psychotic imagination, of a psychotically infected imagination, that the Christians invented the devil. This is well known. Now, people may pretend that the devil exists, and they may even say they have met the devil. The devil is, a psychotic fiction invented by Christians. The inverted pentagram is woo, often associated with Satanism. This is completely ridiculous. The actual meaning of the inverted pentagram is grounding. Grounding of your five senses in the sensuous body of the planet. That's what the inverted pentagram means. The point down is like driving a stake into the ground or planting the stem of a plant in the ground. That's how you should see it. And the five points of the pentagram in the Shakti cluster are occupied by these five diamond sky dakinis around Vivi, Vajravilasi, and they represent a fantastic formula for interaction and experimenting with magic. So don't be afraid when you see a pentagram, because you've really been conned. There's a huge con going on in this world about evil and the satanic and luciferic powers. It's just such a load of crap.
Yeah, it really is. You know? It really is. When you really, once you see through that, it doesn't bother you anymore. It's gone. It's like when you're a child and realizing that there's no Santa Claus, you know? It's like, ah.
It's like realizing that there's no Santa Claus, there's no Satan either, but there really are evil people.
Of course there are.
We don't need Satan to have human evil. The source of evil in the human world is human. Mm-hmm. Get that through your head. That's what the Gnostics taught us. The source of evil in the human world is human. It's not supernatural. There is no evil in the supernatural worlds. Don't take my word for it, but I'm just telling you, I've been there a lot. And I have not found any evil there. The evil that I see is the evil in the hearts of human beings.
Yeah, in the stupidity of humans,
And the stupidity, because evil and stupidity breed on each other very nicely.
Now, John, is there any significance of, what do you say, the grounding aspect of the pointed, the inverted part of the point.
Yeah, inverted.
Is there any significance of that being associated with Kudukuda right now, and with her taking over kind of control of the movements of the Shakti cluster?
Very definitely. You know, the Shakti cluster is a dynamic console of these infernal Dakini powers. And my experience of it has been vivid and ongoing since July of 2008. So I've been plugged into the Shakti cluster now for about 3 years, going on 3 years. And the amazing thing is to learn the dynamics of this. And what happened last year at the time of the Haiti earthquake was that Gaia, who is the central focus of this Shakti cluster, this turbulent vortex, actually handed over the direction of the cluster to another Dakini, Kurukula, so that Gaia could devote her attention entirely to something that she wants to do with humanity. And that's very interesting to know what that is that Gaia wants to teach us. And the reason why she handed over the direction, it's like, say, she is the pilot of a ship, Gaia. She is the pilot of the spaceship Earth. And normally she's at the tiller, she's at the wheel. But she hands over the wheel of the ship to Kurukula so that she can turn to us, the passengers, and teach us something about navigating the ship with her.
And you say that turnover happened in 2010 with the Haiti earthquake.
It happened simultaneously. It happened in January of 2010, pretty much simultaneously at the time of the Haiti earthquake, around the 16th of January. So we have a fantastic opportunity to learn from Gaia herself, to learn from the planetary animal mother, as well as to learn and receive instruction from her Dakinis and from her Mahavidyas by following the format of the moon through its 30-day cycle. We learn how to do this and how to receive this instruction, because different instructions come at different times, just like different broadcasts on the radio or television occur at different times. So you have to know the time when the broadcast is happening in order to tune it in. It's a wonderful thing to play with, even if you don't take it seriously. Just like try it out,
See what give happens. Give it at least one cycle, at least just to play with it every day for 30 days and see how you feel at the end of that.
That's right.
Amazing stuff. And John, I don't want to keep you much longer today. How about in closing here for this first outing we're doing with this first talk, could you give us just a very short definition of what is Kala Tantra? Because I think that's something that people need to mull around in their consciousness until we get back to be able to talk about it in more detail in about 2 weeks.
Sure, I'll give it to you in three minutes. When I received, I call myself a Turtan. That's my leading pretense. And you can do anything you want with my pretense. I don't care. You can accept it or not accept it. It's just a pretense. But it's an accurate one. Turtan is someone who discovers a wisdom treasure or a body of spiritual teaching. When I discovered this term of Gaia Awakening in the summer of 2008, I got a total blast of download of a massive amount of material. And I got actually two kinds of tantra at the same time, simultaneously. I got planetary tantra, but I also got Kala tantra. And at the beginning, I was so dazzled and overwhelmed by the richness of this mother lode of wisdom that I sometimes confuse the two. And you'll find that in the pages of planetary tantra, you'll find sometimes there's a bit of a muddle about what is the difference between these two. So in conclusion, I'll make it really clear. Planetary tantra is interactive magic with Gaia. It's a pact, a sacred pact of bioenergetic connection with the earth. And it uses ritual and it uses the Dakini instructions, which we learn to receive. Kala Tantra, but planetary Tantra does not necessarily use sexuality or sexual ritual as such. So you have the option in Planetary Tantra to practice it without practicing it sexually. Kala Tantra is the extension of Planetary Tantra into actual sexual dynamics and sexual ritual. So that's the difference between the two.
Okay, and what does Kala itself actually mean?
Kala is a word that means great many things in Sanskrit. It is related to the root of the word Kali, so it can mean time, it can mean darkness, depending on how you pronounce it. But principally, Kala means now, this instant. Kala is this instant, and Kala Tantra is the practice of what is present in this instant.
I like that. That's wonderful. And John, I think in our next talk, I want to open up with you talking about how this actually came about, the actual download experience, because that's a phenomenal story that people would, I think, get a lot out of, to be exposed to a good telling of that.
Well, I've never done that. So I look forward to the opportunity, and it would be the first time I would speak directly to someone. I've written about it here and there on the site, but I have the pleasure to speak to you about it directly, and that would be great. I look forward to
yes.
that.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, John, is there anything you would like to say in closing?
Just want to repeat the point that I made a few minutes ago, that this practice will engage you if you enjoy it. It's so enjoyable. It's a practice of enjoyment, which is called bhoga in Sanskrit. Bhoga means enjoyment, to enjoy. And I would close with a wonderful line I love to cite from the Mahanirvana Tantra. You know, the practices of the devotees of Kali are a pleasure to perform.
They certainly are.
So there's no obligation, there's no onerous exercises in this practice. It's what you do for pleasure that makes it work. And the more pleasure, the better it works.
The more pleasure, the better it works.
That's
lovely.
Right.
Lovely. Well, and I want to say one thing in closing, and kind of to tie back in with your disclaimer, I'm not making John into a guru by any stretch of the imagination, but if doing these talks is in one sense very difficult for me, because every time I listen to your voice now, I get this swelling up of immense energy in my upper part of my chest that makes it almost impossible for me to listen to you. It's a very strange thing. I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to work with that energy and kind of submerge it a little bit into a lower part of the body, because it's an incredible reverberation of energy that gets right up into my throat sometimes. So I just want to put that out for people. If it sounds like my voice kind of shakes at times, it's because there is actually something going on inside there. So I just want to put that out for what it's worth. So, John, shall we call it a day for today?
Yes. Let's do that.
Okay. And we will do this the next time with the coming new moon.
That's right.
Okay. John, thank you very much for today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your afternoon there in Spain.
Thank you.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.